Hey, Heather, how you doing? It's Sam.
Good, hi.
Hey, thanks for being patient. I just stepped out to grab a coffee real quick, but if you're ready, let's just jump right into the podcast.
Yeah, great.
All right, hit the button. We're recording. This is it. This is the podcast.
Cool.
I want to thank you so much for, A, just doing my podcast. I know you're here at the Majestic Theater on Thursday. And I want to thank you for two reasons, not just doing my podcast, which I am like slobberingly grateful for anyone who does my podcast, but I have been a fan of yours since I listened to you on Jay Moore's podcast, More Stories.
Oh yes, that was so fun.
Which ultimately led to me listening to Juicy Scoop. And
oh, good.
I can say this because on the podcast, every now and then, my wife hosts Juicy Scoop, right? I mean, excuse me, my wife hosts a podcast, right?
Yeah.
And with me, thanks to Juicy Scoop, I am an awesome person to like her. She with her friends, they call me like this housewives whisperer, but all I'm really doing is repeating everything you just said off Juicy Scoop.
I love it. That's great.
And with that, I want to just thank you because, like, how many things she's given me in the car. In the car, she's looking at me like, who are you? Because I'm not really the greatest housewife guy. I'm not really Bravo-centric, if you will.
Yes.
But I listen to Juicy Scoop, so I'm like, by proxy, an expert because you're awesome. And I believe you just came back from BravoCon.
I did, and you know, I think what kind of makes my show special is that a lot of people don't watch the shows and they still enjoy it, because even if I'm describing an episode or what's going on, I just sort of relate it to, like, where it could relate to anyone's life, because it is real life, you know, like a fight or a breakup of a marriage or whatever. So, yeah, I just came back from BravoCon, and I'm so glad I went. I mean, it really was done so well. It was like such a like classy event. There were so many fun, cool things for people to do. Like there was this housewife museum with their reunion dresses and like funny things. And then there were like, you know, it was just, besides the panels and stuff, there was just a lot to do throughout the 3 days or how many days you went. So I think it's definitely going to continue and be bigger, much bigger next year. Prediction.
I mean, once again, not really my thing, but I get how important it is to those who love Bravo and love the shows that come with it, and I get it. Don't get me wrong. As a guy who's kind of sort of on the fringe of all that type of stuff,
yeah,
I totally understand. But I would be remiss if I didn't say anything in this podcast where I didn't thank you for saving my ass countless times with my wife's friends, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, mm-hmm, and I'm just like verbatim,
yeah,
repeating after you. Also, just side congratulations, thank you, because they went, what was it, we went to this seafood place not too long ago, and then I was like, you know what would go good with that? A buttery Chardonnay. And then they were like, what is that? And then I look like a hero once again, quoting you.
Oh my gosh, this is wonderful. Thank you.
But my journey outside of More Stories, which ultimately led me to Juicy Scoop, I used to watch, I don't know, well, you probably did so much, you probably forgot about this, Nick Jr.'s Mom's Night Out. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. That was like one of the first sets I've seen you do, and then since, you know, those two, I've been working retroactively because my kid left on Nick Jr. and like, what was it, like at 8 or 8:30, it was like about an hour of comedy, and you were one of the people on there. And I really like your stuff, and just start following your story a little bit. Like, you started comedy right after college. Now, this is a story. Please correct me if I'm wrong. You started comedy after college, and then you got fired, and then you invited the person that fired you to see your set.
Yes, that is, you got it right. I was at, like, the first, you know, one of those first jobs you get out of school that, you know, are like a corporate job, but I was so excited to get it because, you know, it was enough I could live on my own, and, you know, I had medical insurance, so I'm like, I'm going to be a responsible person. I'm going to take this boring job. This is what, you know, so I went to college, even though I always had aspirations, and I always was doing the plays and being funny and doing musicals. And, you know, we even had like a agent when we were little kids, since we lived just outside of LA. And, but I was just like, oh, it's just so hard. I'm just, you know, I'm not going to ever try. I'll just do this. And then, yeah, then they fired me, and it was great because I had just started to take like a little stand-up comedy class. And at the end of the class, like 6 weeks, you know, you have like a, almost like a little show, like you would for like your kid's recital or whatever, with stand-up. And so I invited the HR person, and it made her feel so much better that she was firing me, that I was going on to other things.
That's awesome. But they say, like, we wish you the best in your future endeavors. Your future endeavors was like, hey, 8 o'clock tonight, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then from there, you took off, and then you took some time off a little after you got married. What made you want to get back in comedy? Usually when people take time, it's like the kiss of death. One thing about I noticed about comics is the only job, you kind of forget how to do it in 2 weeks if you don't do it.
Yes, I mean, that's what kind of happened is I got this, like, TV deal, and my manager was like, hey, don't go out and do stand-up for a while because I just don't want you to, like, not do well. And then they're like, how did this girl get this deal or something? And which was horrible advice, but I was like, okay, you know. And then more and more time went by, and I was still, like, in the business. Like, I was, you know, auditioning and getting little jobs here and there, and then, you know, writing on some projects and stuff, but I wasn't doing the stand-up. And I didn't miss it at all. I really didn't, because I lived far from the clubs, and I was married, and I had a stepdaughter and all that. And then when I started watching Last Comic Standing is when it made me really miss it and want to do it. And I'm like, oh, now I'm, like, married with a child. I'd have to... And then right out of the blue, this girl that used to put these all-girl shows together that Chelsea would do a lot too, she called me and she's like, I can't believe you quit stand-up. And I'm like, did I? And she's like, well, it's been like 7 years. I'm like, I guess you're right. And I'm like, well, I'm actually working on some material. And she's like, you want to do my show in August? And that's kind of the way my whole life works. Like, I have to have a deadline. I have to have something that's going to hold me accountable to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just me saying, okay, I'll go on Tuesday or whatever. Like, I knew, okay, now I'm committed to doing this. I'm going to invite some people. And I just did really well coming back into it. And then I was like, okay, now I'm on the groove. Now I'm in the groove of doing stand-up again, of building on a set and perfecting jokes and getting comfortable again. And, yeah, and then shortly after that, about like 8 or 9 months after that, is when the Chelsea Lately opportunity came up, and I submitted for that, and then got that show, and, you know, thought it was going to last for 3 months, and it lasted 7.5 years, and it was just such the most fun I've ever had, like, working with people. It was just the best.
One thing I always wanted to know, I mean, like, when you worked on Chelsea Lately, and I have talked with people who've been on, pretty much After Lately, your After Lately character. Granted, those are heightened versions of yourself. Do people actually get you mixed up with your After Lately persona?
I mean, you know, it was so long ago, and I think, no, yes, a little bit. I think that they did. And that's why when I started the podcast, I would get a lot of people saying, I'm going to be honest, you know, I used to watch Chelsea Lately, and I didn't really like you that much on that show. I didn't know any of the stuff about you. And I'm like, God, I was on for 7 years. I was on this panel like a couple times a month. I was doing sketches, and I'd written 2 books. But not until the podcast did people, like, really get to know who I am as a person, my point of view, and like no other medium, you know. And so, yes, there were heightened versions of ourselves. So it was like I was kind of like, I mean, literally under the poster it said the fame whore. That's what they called me, you know. And I'm like, really, you know? I had the same friend since I was 6 years old. I don't really think I'm a fame whore, but whatever. But, you know, I went along with it, and everybody went along with it. But everybody didn't really like their label. Like, I think Sarah's was, like, the slutty one. I mean, can you imagine that on a poster today?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, like, oh, I mean, it was, you know, and then, you know, and, it, like, but every, you know, Chris's was a playboy, and, Jen was like the angry one and she didn't like that, but it was, you know, it was really, a really fun show to do.
If you sit back and think about it, the only one who got off light was Josh. The only one who kind of got off
light.
Yeah, their character kind of where you just kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, since then, you've worked on a lot of different projects, or during then, actually. When you see your audience, can you look at your audience and say, like, oh, okay, this person knows me from the podcast, this person knows me from Malcolm in the Middle, White Chicks, Drake and Josh, etc. Like, can you kind of, like, differentiate your audience, since it's been so much time between Chelsea, and now you've done other things, can you just kind of, like, pick and choose where they know you from?
No, I mean, I think most people that are, like, going to see me in Detroit are familiar with me from those things, from Chelsea, from stand-up, and from the podcast. But there are a lot of people that will come up to me after and be like, that was so funny, I remember you from Chelsea, and then I'll say, do you listen to the podcast? And then they get all embarrassed. No, but I will now. And I'm like, that's fine, that's great. You know, and then that's why I also, when I do stand-up, I, like, tell my podcast audience, like, you can invite your husband, invite your friends, because the stand-up that I do on stage is not as reality show-based as some people might think the podcast is. It's, like, more about just life in general and what's going on in the world and my personal life and marriage and dating and kids and all that. So it's very, very relatable, not political, not male-bashing. Like, so sometimes I, you know, so that, yes, I think that's what it is. But the majority of the people now buying the tickets do listen to the podcast.
Oh, okay. But one thing I do love about your fans, because I've been fortunate enough to see you do stand-up, and just going to one of your shows, I was one of those people who kind of had that stigma. It was like, oh, it's just, and excuse me, like the typical audience of just ladies and gays. It just, that's what I thought. And then I came in, I saw your material, and it's very relatable, and it's something that everyone can take from this. One thing I will say about your audience, though, I will say this. Maybe it was my night, maybe it was my experience. Here's one thing I did learn from your audience. They, if push comes to shove, they will drink you under the table. I don't know what it is. They will. But that's good. Everyone's out having a good time. And it was just kind of like a, I want to say, lack of a better term, like a tailgating experience. But, you know.
Yes, what's great about my audience, and this is the thing I'm always so proud of, is like at the end of a weekend, like if I do three nights at a comedy club, the staff and everybody is like, that was the best weekend. Oh my God, your audience is so nice. They bought the better alcohol. They tipped well. You know, they were pleasant. They were on time. The show started on time. Like those kind of things that, you know, sometimes you don't see in a normal comedy club. And I bring in an audience that is not necessarily a comedy going audience. Like I've introduced them to a lot of comedy. And so, it's sort of a Bravo audience too, you know, and so it's still majority of women, but I've told them like, you know, they would say, oh, I'm coming to your show, like, invite me. I'm dragging my husband. And I'm like, you're not helping the cause if you're saying that you're dragging your husband. Hey, trust me that your husband will have a good time. I'm like, if your husband got tickets for you and he to go see Chris Rock, you'd be so excited.
Exactly.
So why do you think that your husband won't be thrilled? Because I'm a woman, you're afraid you're going to be on edge, that I'm going to, like, you know, male bash him. I can see why in this climate. And I, you know, and some of the more popular, more famous female stand-up, that is a big part of their act. So it's like, but that's not me. So, and the guys love it, and straight guys, gay guys, whatever, everybody that comes loves it. I get a lot of, like, mother-daughters and sisters and, you know, people that all kind of share the same, they share the podcast together, talk about it together. So it's just really been the greatest thing for the live shows has been the success of the Juicy Scoop podcast, for sure.
Speaking of the podcast, I'm a podcaster like you, a podcaster. I would ask two questions. The first one, I would be crucified if I did not ask this question, because when we kind of put it out there that we could be talking to you, it's just this question came up a lot. All right. You wrote White Chicks. Will there be a White Chicks 2?
Well, okay, first of all, I was working on another project with the Wayans brothers that was going to be like another type of scary movie, but it was going to be a parody of alien movies. And then I think the Weinstein brothers or something, kind of like, I don't know, we're doing something similar. So we wrote that whole movie and it got shelved. Meanwhile, they had sold the idea of White Chicks. And I was at their offices and I saw like the paper, you know, that said that they'd sold a show about these girls in the Hamptons, kind of based on Nikki and, Paris Hilton. And I was like, can I please write on this one? I'm like, don't you at least need one White Chick consultant? Like, and they're like, oh, okay, great, you know. So they kind of already had like the whole story. And then I joined for many weeks and, or a couple months in like shaping the scenes and the characters and coming up with different ideas and saying like, so basically like one scene I was really responsible with creating and writing was when they're trying on the clothes. And so they're like, okay, write up that scene. And then I was like, they were like, we're hoping to get you, but when you're in Canada, when they film in Canada, they have to use so many people from Canada. And they called like that, like just a couple hours before, and they're like, okay, can you come tomorrow? We were able to get it that it can be you. You know, we've used enough Canadian actors. We can now have you come. And so that was really great that I got to be in the movie as well. And so I went out there twice, once to like help with like punch up and then the next time to go and film those scenes. And so I love it. I mean, I keep in touch with the producer, Rick Alvarez and Marlett. And, you know, I'm like, if this ever happens, I better be able to consult or punch it up or write it because I have really good ideas for it. But, you know, I don't know if they'll do it again because the guys, Sean and Marlon, they literally slept like 2 hours a day. I mean, they would finish at like 1 a.m. and then their call time was like at 3 or 4 a.m. for makeup. Like, it was just,
wow.
I think it was like the most brutal thing. Now, I don't know if today maybe it would be a little easier. I think it would be amazing. I can't believe like whole new generations, like my kids' age are watching it. They love it. So, I mean, I think it could be really funny. My only concern is in this day and age, would people find it somewhat like making fun of transgender people or something, which it wasn't, you know, that it's a classic theme of a movie that some like it hot to think. Mm-hmm. There's been a bunch of movies about how men have to pretend to be women to solve a crime or get a job or whatever. And, that's really what the genre was, you know? And so I think today enough people really want it that it would be really successful, but it's just, you know, they all have so many different projects going. So who knows?
Well, we'll see.
But hopefully if it happens, I'd like to be part of it for sure.
Well, we'll see. But one thing I want to do, like I said, it was two questions. One, that was the main one. This one, I'm kind of on this camp right here. If we didn't ask you, I listen to Juicy Scoop. I know who I'm talking about. Heather, you are the reality whisperer. You call The Bachelor. You call Meghan Markle's dress for the royal wedding. I mean, we're going to give you your props because you did that.
Thank you.
I mean, I want to just put it on record that you did. There are others who was like, well, no, you called it. Now,
yes.
I know you are a USC alum.
Yes.
We saw what happened with Huffman. Can you call how the Lori Loughlin thing shakes out?
I definitely think that she and her husband are going to do some time. And for some reason, I think that, I think the husband was more involved. I think he's the one that pushed it a little bit more. He's the one that has the email or something saying like to his accountant, I worked the system. I think that he will get like 4 years, but do two. And I think she will get 2 years and have to do like 8 or 9 months.
You heard it here first. You heard it here. And you heard it first on your podcast. I mean, but I just want the record, multiple outlets to say that you called it. If it shakes out that way, you will get a very congratulatory tweet from me. And I want to do that. But one thing I want to know, when you talk about celebrities and you are the reality whisperer, how do you feel being a celebrity transformed your life, better, worse, indifferent?
Well, I mean, the little bit of fame that I have is just it's great, because it's not like I can't go out. It's just like a little perk once in a while, and that's always really fun. And going to BravoCon this weekend was great, because all those people were Juicy Scoopers and they recognized me, so I loved every second, and they were all so nice. Yet I was also there to be a fan of the stars of the network, so it was great. And it's like, I don't have an ego about it, so I'm like happy to be a part of it. There's never been a negative. The only thing I say is a little bit of a negative. Sometimes being the little bit of fame that I have sometimes keeps me from being the bitch I sometimes believe I deserve to be, like in a customer service situation. Like, I will never, like, you know, get mad at somebody or freak out because someone's always filming. But there's times where, like, someone is not doing a good job.
But what if you're justified? That's what I was going to say. Yeah. What if you're justified? I said, what if you're justified in your complaint?
I don't think it's worth it. Because it's like the way people, there's always these things like, what celebrity have you seen that was rude, you know? And it's like, God, you don't know what happened when you met that person in the parking lot. You don't know if they just got in a horrible fight, just got served with a lawsuit, it's been sick for 3 days. But if you just are not completely pleasant every second, then someone will speak badly of you. And those are the kind of rumors that then go around. You know, so it's like, I think it's really important that if you're at all, for anybody, they should know that they're going to be watched every second. But even just, you know, maybe that's what will make the world nicer, is that everyone's being watched. Because it really is, like, not worth it, you know, if someone films you freaking out somewhere or whatever.
Well, yeah, I guess it's a way, that's a real way to look at it. But if you don't, I guess, yeah, you're right. But you gotta, if that bottled up emotion takes place, when you snap, it's going to be epic.
Yeah, I've had my moments. I've had some moments with friends and stuff, but not like with strangers.
But one thing, I mean, you kind of answered my last question. I always love asking this question to comics, musicians alike, is what have you learned about yourself during your career experiences, like a lesson that you learned and you still use to this day?
I think the best lesson for people that are in this business where, you know, they're constantly having to be judged or rejected, you know, or accepted, you know, with auditioning, is to know that people want it to be you. Like, when you audition for something, you go in, the casting director wants you to be the one. But I think sometimes people think, oh, this person's against me somehow, or this, they're not going to accept me, because you deal with so much rejection. But that's not really true, you know, and so I just think, you know, I wish I had the confidence that I have now. Like, I wish I had it, like, you know, 20 years ago. I'd be probably a lot further, though I'm happy where I am in life, but I'd probably be a lot further. So, I mean, and the other advice is, like, it's going to be somebody, why not you? Like, I think sometimes people always think, well, I could never do that. That could never be me. And it's like, well, why not? Why couldn't it be? And I think even more now than ever, with people, you know, really opening up the landscape of how people can have their own businesses and have their own fan base, and it's not just based on one NBC executive deciding if you're right for TV or not, you know, I think it's a great time for everyone to really pursue their passions.
That's awesome. I wish you nothing. I want to thank you. This is what we like to call Promote-a-thon, part of the podcast. Please, everything Heather McDonald related, please push, promote, do what you gotta do. The floor is yours.
So everything's at heathermcdonald.net. You can find my podcast Juicy Scoop there, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's free every Tuesday and Thursday. I also have Patreon, which is special special every Friday. I do special podcasts, and then of course I'll be in Detroit this Thursday, Chicago, lots of dates, though, in the new year as well. And everything's at heathermcdonald.net.
Heather, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. We're going to make sure we post us on our social media as well, because I want you to have a few more juicy scoopers. If anything,
yes,
whatever that Venn diagram between my audience and your audience, where a bunch of guys can look like heroes at their wife's
yes
functions, great. If for
I
nothing else. I mean, like, does that get you in the door? And you may learn something while you're over there. I know I did.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Heather. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.